America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
We welcome you back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live, powered by PPV.com. We are a few weeks away from Tank Davis and Lamont Roach. Order it on PPV.com. Join us in what has now become the place to be on Fight Night, the live interactive chat with Chris Algieri typing away, Jim Lampley doing his thing, Lance Pugmire, I'm in there as well. Tank versus Roach, March 1st. From the Barclays Center is the next pay-per-view on PPV.com. No subscription. Stream it to your phone, tablet, any device, and join us for what should be a really fun fight night. We're coming off of Benavidez and Morel, which was an awesome night. Chris was in that chat firing off punches, firing off shots like his, and he was in his prime, like a 1,000-punch type of fight that Chris Algieri was giving us in his prime. He's doing that in the chat now. Mr. Yeah. Chris Algieri, how are you?
Yeah, I've shifted my skill set over to live chatting during fights instead of live punching. But it was a lot of fun in the chat last time out. Guys, definitely keep coming through. It's been more and more people each and every time. This time it was like hard. I was like, I'm defending all these messages coming at me. It's like, it literally was like a fight. I had to be like really locked in. But it was a lot of fun. It was cool.
It's cool. Like for this March 1st, I'll be doing the DraftKings hits on the broadcast again. And it was cool to like go do the hits, come back to the chat, and everyone's like, yo, Dan, you did good on that one. Or Dad's crazy to see. Like, that's really cool to me. So it's kind of like a behind the scenes type of thing. So really cool. So go ahead and order Tank Roach, which is quickly approaching, man. We're right here February 6th as we record this, less than 3 weeks away from that. We're less than 2 weeks away from this giant Riyadh card, February 22nd, which is Bivol and Beterbiev, round two, which a lot of people were talking about. We have a lot of voicemails on this episode. A lot of those were centered around Beterbiev, Bivol. You know, it's a really good fight, and that just shows you the intelligence of our fans. They don't want to talk about Jake Paul Canelo. They don't want to talk about, we will talk about that on this episode. They want to talk about Beterbiev, Bivol, Chris.
Yeah, they want to talk about fights that are happening, you know, so right around the corner. They understand the schedule, which is important too. They're not talking about fights that could be happening or could not be happening many months in advance, just because they're, you know, we don't have casuals on our listener base. We've got real boxing heads.
What a segue. Chris, you set me up. You teed me up there perfectly, because we start off last episode talking about how Canelo and Crawford have come to an agreement, according to Ring Magazine. Canelo and Crawford is on September 13th. Allegiant Stadium was the next announcement a few days later, despite UNLV having a football game at Allegiant Stadium on September 13th. Then we get last night, February 5th, Wednesday, around 10 p.m. Eastern, a cryptic tweet goes out from the Ring Magazine, which is owned by Turkey Elçik, that Canelo,
cryptic from a magazine. That's great, Dan. I love the way you put that.
What?
Cryptic from a magazine. I mean, that's the world we live in right now.
That's the whole magazine. If it was a magazine, it would be one page. It would be a very small blurb. And the blurb would say, Canelo Crawford is now off. The ring has learned. And I'm like, is this like this fake Benson account? Is this one of these knuckleheads out there on Twitter putting together a fake graphic? But it's not, Chris. Apparently, Canelo Crawford, 7 months away, a fight that was maybe never on to begin with, is now off. What's your level of shock here?
I'm not shocked at all. I was shocked that they announced it so early and were like putting out these, you know, like these messages, like, you know, the Allegiant Stadium. It's what we keep seeing over and over again. Just putting the cart before the horse. Like, that's not the way boxing works. Usually, especially with Canelo, we don't hear who he's fighting until 5 weeks out. Like, now we're 7 months out and we're hearing about it. So I'm not surprised one bit. Also, just that fight in general is kind of weird the way it came together. But not a whole lot of surprise here, buddy.
You know what's the most surprising is you said about, you know, it's about Canelo. Canelo announces his fight. Canelo's the one that says, I am fighting this person on this date. He has taken a page out of Floyd Mayweather's book, where if it doesn't come from Canelo himself, then it ain't true. And what were we missing from a lot of these announcements? Anything, any message from Canelo?
Yep.
And what happened with Canelo in Turkey last year or sometime earlier this year or last year? He didn't like the way Turkey operated. He didn't like how he dealt with things. I don't like the way he talks. I don't have a boss. I'm Canelo Alvarez. I'm one of one. I don't need Turkey. All that was the messaging from Canelo. They meet up at the Ring Magazine Award Show in January. They have a photo op. All of a sudden, we're getting a slew of these messages, like you said, like an agreement is in place. Talks are happening. Mm-hmm. It's looking like it's going to happen. Agreement is in place. And it's all coming from the Ring Magazine, which, you know, coincidentally is owned by Turkey. So, you know, do the math. Is he giving the messaging out? Probably. But one thing is that we never heard from Canelo throughout all of this. And I said this in a little video I put out yesterday. Canelo's not the easiest guy to negotiate with, and that's not a slight on him. He's one of the biggest stars in all of sports. He wants to be in control. He wants to be in charge. He's the one that dictates things and usually gets what he wants. So there's a lot of different theories on why this fight is now off. But you know, one thing we didn't hear from was Canelo and all this that gave me a little bit of pause, but I'm not going to lie. I fell for it. You know, when I saw those tweets coming from the Ring account, given Turkey's involvement and given Turkey's track record now of making big fights, I was like, yeah, okay, this fight probably will happen.
Well, it's still not completely off the board.
It's not 100%.
So I'm gonna give a little anecdote related to my own career. And Turkey's just acting like a promoter. And this happened to me before the Pacquiao fight. My promoter at the time kept putting out press releases that the Pacquiao fight deal was done, and it wasn't. And I went AWOL. I was like, I'm negotiating, guys. Like, you don't need to hear from me right now. I'm going to make you sweat. And I was making my promoter sweat. He didn't like it. So he started putting out press releases. I don't know if you remember, there was a press release that Algeria leaving millions on the table. It was something like that. And it was in the news. So,
man, I would love to have a title like that. Kenobi leaving millions on the table. Yeah.
Algeria about to lose multi-million dollar deal, you know, blah, blah, blah. Because I was making my promoter sweat. And for him to try and force my hand, he went to the media. He went out. I started pumping things out. But just like you said, listen, I'm not Canelo Alvarez. But in terms of what my promoter was, I was. I was the star of the show. What I said, go. I was the biggest guy that he had. So when I announced my fights, that's when the fight was really actually happening. So if no one heard from me, because like I said, I was AWOL. I was hiding out, waiting for everybody to stop sweating so I could go in there and negotiate properly. And the press releases kept coming out. People were asking me, hey man, what's going on with the Pacquiao fighter? I heard it's off. I'm like, don't worry. Wait, relax. Playing chess, not checkers, buddy. So this fight is not definitely off. This could be a ploy by both sides. One, you know, Turkey using his media arm to put the pressure on Team Canelo, and Canelo being like, yeah, listen, I don't hit the rush for anybody. You're waiting on me. So I think both of them are jockeying back and forth with their egos and their power. So this fight very well may happen, probably still will. But I think it's going to take we're not going to hear about it till, like I said, a normal Canelo fight 5-6 weeks prior.
Bro, it's not dead. This fight is not dead by any means. No. I have a lot of theories, and I'm going to throw them out there and why I don't think it's going to happen. Listen, like, Canelo is different than the rest. Like, Anthony Joshua and Eddie Hearn, they will listen to everything Turkey says. They will follow all of his orders. That's crazy, because that's Anthony Joshua, one of the biggest stars in boxing. Tyson Fury will follow in lockstep with what Turkey says and what their plans are. A lot of these fighters that have fought over in Riyadh will do that. Canelo is much different than all of those guys. He is, like, look at what he's doing, like a $15 million gate against Berlanga here in Las Vegas last year. Like, he's different, man. You know, he's not going to fall in lockstep with Turkey. Not going to hold his hand and all that stuff.
He's not going to clean his shoes, like Eddie Hearn says.
Wild. You know,
for his fighters. Wild.
Wild.
What a world.
But I don't think the fight is dead. I do think this is your traditional posturing by either side. You know, as much as Turkey has made these big fights and has made them happen, now we're seeing, oh, I'm dealing with a different beast here. You know, this is not, like I just said, some of these other fighters before, this is Canelo Alvarez, so it's different. And even in a world where the biggest fights are being made with Saudi involvement because of money, this is not going to be an easy one to make. I don't think it's dead, but I have some theories, Chris. because we don't have any concrete reasoning for why this fight isn't happening. Maybe that will come out in the next few days. Maybe that will come out by the time this episode hits YouTube and iTunes. But it's not going to stop me from throwing out some theories and having some fun with this. Theory number one. You guys have all heard about this Canelo-Jake Paul fight,
right? Did you consult the crystal ball on this? Is this Dan's crystal ball, or is this just came to you in the middle of the night stuff?
This is me, like, being around the sport for a long time and immediately, oh, this is interesting. My brain starts churning. Like, I wonder what, this is, like, fun. Like, what is the real reason? Like,
I'm gonna get
what's
you a
going
crystal
on?
Ball prop, I think, to put on your desk for these shows so you can just.
I know, I have my bobblehead. I have the Dan Canobio bobblehead, but I don't
that's
have the.
That's a good one. Damn, you got a lot ball. Of belts, huh? You got a lot of belts on there.
Three. I need one more, right? Become undisputed.
Almost undisputed there.
Hey, the green. More. I'm missing the green one. The WBC.
Well, the green one's on, no, the green one's on the waist.
Oh, shit. I am undisputed. That's right.
Oh, shit.
Didn't realize.
For those listening, we're looking at a bobblehead doll of Dan, who's got the old four belts on him.
Yeah, my dad got me this for Christmas a few years ago. Look at that thing's sick. Got the John Boy hat on. I got to update that.
Yeah, you gotta get rid of that. You got to go get IBL.
IBL hat.
We gotta get some swagger, dude. We got to get some
I'm down merch. To make some shirts, make some merch. I'm going to get around to that.
Stickers.
Shirts, hats, even if it's like just for us or like small amount of give them out as giveaways and stuff. I'm definitely going to get on that. Yes. So here are my theories as to why Canelo Crawford is off. These are just from my dumb brain. This is not from me texting anyone, me knowing any information.
No, so this Canelo Jake,
what?
No insider information. None. This is off the dome.
Yeah. I wanted to have fun with this. So this Canelo Jake Paul fight, according to Dan Rafael and according to a lot of people I talked out in Vegas, is in preliminary talks. There's a lot of smoke around Canelo Jake Paul for May. There's a potential that this fight is finished and Canelo's next fight could very well be Jake Paul on May 3rd. We know that Turkey does not like Jake Paul. There's my theory number one is that Turkey does not want to be associated with anything Jake Paul. He doesn't want to say like, oh, you know, keep putting out these reports that Canelo and Crawford this, Canelo Crawford that, keep the hype train going for the next 7 months when Canelo and Jake could be making their announcement and going through everything that involves a fight build up to that magnitude. So Turkey pulls the plug on the fight, even though the fight could still very well happen because he doesn't want to be associated with anything Jake Paul, anything with that fight, doesn't want to diminish the Canelo Crawford fight. In all that. That's theory number one. What do you think of that?
Interesting theory. But again, that theory puts power in the hands of power back in the hands of Turkey, you know, and he's deciding, you know, but okay. All right. Next one.
I want to keep going with that.
We go. I'll poke
I want to keep going with that one because how that all would play out. Mm-hmm. Do you think like Canelo and Crawford, you know, they did have the frameworks of a deal in place. Mm-hmm. You know, Turkey did meet the demands of Canelo because I don't think Crawford has too many demands here. I think he's willing to just kind of go along with this negotiation and take whatever they're going to throw at him. I'm sure he has a little bit of demands, but he's not going to hold up the fight. And Canelo said, yeah, I'll agree to that. I'll fight Crawford. And Turkey's like, okay, we'll make this happen. And then we get wind of this Jake Paul fight. And then, you know, he's like, you know what? I got to pull that plug. I can't have that. You know, that's not part of this deal. Like you didn't tell me that you're going to be fighting Jake Paul in September. That's not what we agreed to. That's not what we wanted. I could see that. I could see it playing out like that.
Yeah, no, I don't hate this theory. But it's again, I'm posing that it's like, all right, well then it's putting the power back in Turkey's hands. The fact that we have
isn't that what he wants though?
I'm sure it is. Yeah, absolutely. But do you think Canelo's just going to sit there and let that be the driver? That's what makes me kind of think, you know, if that is plausible, which it is. I always thought it was weird though to go from Jake Paul to Crawford though. You know,
well, like yeah, I know because Canelo's never done this. He's never had his full year planned out. You know, like a few weeks before.
Right, and I really think he is the master of his own ship, or the captain of his own ship, so to speak. So he like decides who and when and where and whatever he wants to do because he can. Similar to how you mentioned Floyd earlier. I don't know, you know, the brain trust that's around Canelo, they're going with what he says. Yeah, I'm sure he listens to his people. He respects the guys around him. He's got some smart people around him as well. But, you know, he can do what he wants. So, yeah, it's very odd for him to have that laying out in advance. If it were, I would literally be like, all right, well, this is just a retirement tour then. Because then if that's what it looks like. These are not really, they're not really competitive fights. Well, Crawford is potentially. So at that point, I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts, and this is a really weird situation. Both fights are weird, and the order is exceptionally weird. Then you mix in Riyadh and Saudi, it gets even weirder. Yeah. Interesting there. And you got me thinking now. Now I'm going to be up in the middle of the night thinking of theories.
I hope not. I was up till 2 in the morning because this did break late, and I was churning. Yeah, it's very possible that Canelo did agree, and Turkey's like, okay, we got a deal. And then Turkey gets wind of this Jake Paul thing, calls up Canelo, and is like, what are you doing? Like, you're fighting Jake Paul before my big fight? This is going to overshadow the Crawford fight. Because I do believe, as crazy as this sounds, I think a Canelo-Jake Paul fight is bigger than a Canelo-Crawford fight. In terms of casual eyeballs, if it's on Netflix.
In numbers, absolutely.
Yeah, and Turkey's like, wait a second. Like, I'm not having Jake Paul overshadow me. So you
I
either
can't imagine that phone call.
Right. You either stop talking to this Jake Paul or the Crawford fights off. And Canelo didn't blink. And Turkey puts out that message, has whoever at Ring Magazine write that. And now it's Turkey's way of trying to, you know, put Canelo in his place. These are all theories, guys. I'm having fun with this.
We've seen that. Canelo don't blink.
Imagine that call, and I was like, "Eh, who?
What? Fuck out
of here." That's what he said to me every time I was telling him those words, like what "bussin" means, and he went, "Eh." So
hey,
I could see him doing
you.
That.
Fuck out of here! Fuck you! Fuck out of here!
Like, who is this? Turkey? Get the fuck out of here!
Yeah, for real.
Payday. So that's one theory, but I also do want to talk about this Canelo Jake Paul fight, where I was asked about it a lot in Vegas. I heard rumblings about it. You know, I had some people coming up to me because I know I work with MVP, and I was like, I don't know anything, guys. I was like,
I'm not that close in there, guys.
I was like, if I do, I'm not going to say anything, but I have not heard anything about Canelo and Jake Paul. Would I be shocked if Canelo fought Jake Paul in May? No. You know, I've been saying that they're going to fight for a long time now. I am shocked that it would be this quick. Like, I thought maybe next year. I thought maybe in like 2 years. You know, Canelo's unified champion at 168 pounds, and yeah. Like I'm not shocked that a Jake Paul fight with Canelo's next, right?
I think you said it great. That it's next, yeah, this soon. But also, how much Canelo are we getting? You know, is this very well could be the last two fights of Canelo's career? This could be the last year we see Canelo fight, regardless of
where. Where do you go from here? Like Jake Paul and Crawford, where do you go from there?
Nowhere, home. You go and play golf and ride horses. You know, you sit on your $350 million that you made, maybe even more, maybe $500 million he makes between, you know, because of that Jake Paul fight and the numbers. There's nothing to do. Are you going to go and not fight real guys who are going to beat you? No. Who have a chance to beat you? Absolutely not. You know, you get by, the Jake Paul fight's not competitive at all. And then even the Crawford fight, like it's so hedged in Canelo's side because, you know, he's so much bigger and he's coming up to his weight class. You know, you get that win. It's like, now you're going to go fight guys. What? You're going to go fight Benavidez? You're going to fight Bivol? You're going to fight Benavidez? The fight has to be huge. And the only huge guys are guys that I don't know at this stage if Canelo beats them. So you're just going into fights to get to lose. You go and play golf.
Yeah. You go ride your horses. He posted something on Instagram today. He was at some resort. It was snowing, though. It wasn't like he was chilled on the beach. And it's just funny because that always means something. Like all these rumors swirling around. He's just chilling right now, Canelo. Mm-hmm. Jake is tweeting a lot. Like, hey, I'm the A side. My next fight's going to be huge. You know, I heard when there's smoke, there's fire. I heard there's a lot of smoke around Canelo, Jake Paul. And I just want to know, like, what the stipulations would be. Like, how many rounds?
Yeah, that was my big question.
How many rounds?
If this is not a 10-3, then... It's
got to at least be 10-3. We're talking about Canelo Alvarez, pound for pound guy. He's not fighting eight rounds. Like Jake has never fought. Oh, he's fought 10 rounds against Nate Diaz.
I think Fury wasn't Fury, or was that eight?
I believe it was eight as well. I don't know. I would not be shocked if Canelo Jake Paul is the next one for May. We'll know soon enough. There's another theory out there that Canelo had some great awakening and was like, I don't want to fight Terrence Crawford. I'll fight Jake Paul because you're going to pay me $100 million to knock out a novice. But my September fight is going to be against David Benavidez. This is a...
Oh, Dan.
There's some people out there dreaming this.
Yeah.
But not something, not like maybe not David Benavidez, but someone of that ilk. Like, no, I'm sticking to my guns. I never wanted to fight Crawford. He told me that up on a stage last summer. It's too small. I won't get the credit. Could he have like this awakening where PBC maybe was like, hey, we'll up the offer. Like, you know, maybe Benavidez. Another wild theory. Yeah.
He doesn't fight either one of those guys, but this is a pretty far-fetched theory there, Dan.
These are theories.
If, you know, if he didn't fight Benavidez yet, he's never going to fight Benavidez.
And also, like, I saw people saying, like, oh, he saw some cracks in Benavidez. Like, what cracks did you see on Saturday night besides him getting buckled?
Like a goddamn monster. No,
he looked scary
not.
As hell. He looked even better than he has in the past.
People just do not understand how good Morell is. That's the issue. It's because that was a tremendous version of Benavidez. They both look great. So people who are throwing shade on Benavidez just don't understand the sport.
So you're poo-pooing theory number two.
Theory two.
That Canelo.
Theory one, I don't love either, but it's definitely better than theory two.
That Canelo said, that's it. I've heard. I've listened to you guys. I see. I occasionally do look at my phone, and I occasionally do run my own Instagram. And when I look at the comments, I see fight Benavidez.
Yeah. I don't think any of our listeners are believing this one either. But
okay.
You got a lot of theories. I like it. We're going to cover all bases.
Okay.
Theory it's funny how I've turned into such a pessimist about this fight because I was like,
well, I'd like to know what you. I can't wait to hear why you think it's off. Theory number three, Canelo's demands were too much. Mm-hmm. Canelo has got, you know, Turkey desperately wants to work with him.
Priced himself out, you think?
Yeah. Turkey desperately wants to work with Canelo. He's got pretty much every big star under his umbrella besides Tank Davis and Canelo Alvarez. He's got Canelo in his grasp. This is Turkey I'm talking about. Canelo says, all right, I got some leverage here. You want me to fight Crawford? I want $200 million or something of that in that realm. And Turkey was like, no, even I have limits. Theory number three.
That's probably my favorite one. And probably the one that I think is most likely is that the negotiating got contentious and both guys did the walk away from the table, but the doors are open.
Not Crawford. You're talking about Turkey and Canelo.
I'm talking about Turkey and Canelo, right. I'm talking about Turkey and Canelo. I think that's probably what it is. And I'm going back to my own story about my Pacquiao thing. And that, you know, I think again, contentious negotiations back and forth, both these guys have big egos. Both these guys are trying to, you know, swing their meat around. And, sometimes you gotta cool off, little cool off period. Take a lap.
Sometimes you gotta put the meat away.
Yeah. Put the meat back in the fridge. Take a lap. So I think these guys
go
are
outside
and they're going to come back to it. Cause hey, listen, Dan, you've been in many negotiations in your career.
I have.
What you do. Yeah, not boxing negotiating, but like, you know, work, your jobs.
Few.
Yeah,
not nearly enough. I'm horrible at it.
I've been in a ton, put it that way, and related directly to boxing and with tons of promoters. And for majority of my career, people might not know this, I managed myself. So I was in these meetings, you know, working out my deals with these promoters. Coming a guy with no amateur background, didn't have anyone in the sport who knew what the hell was going on, just me and my lawyer. So I learned a thing or two about dealing with promoters and how these situations work. Sometimes, man, you just got to take a lap, take a breather, go outside. I've been in 4 or 5 hour negotiations at a table. And like, yeah, you get contentious. You start yelling at each other. You get up like, all right, hold on. We'll go for a walk around the block. I'm going to go smoke a cig and we'll come back and we'll talk.
The one thing I learned about negotiations is be prepared to walk away.
Always be prepared to walk away.
Because
you got two guys who can do that, meaning Canelo and Turkey. Both of them, they really don't need each other. There's plenty for both parties to do without
Canelo's
each other.
Never needed him. That's the whole point. That's why I was shocked when I not shocked, but that's why I was kind of surprised when I saw all this news, is because Canelo, like we said for many times, can operate in his own little stratosphere. He's his own economy. You know, he doesn't need Turkey. It's the extra dollars that he would maybe take towards the end of his career, which it seems to be the driving force for everything. Well,
it's like
Canelo's doing.
About. It's like, are you just going to leave that money there? It's there. Yeah, yeah. Okay. You don't like the way the guy moves. Go take his money. Go take some money. Go get some money. Like if you're an active fighter, I don't know why you wouldn't try to dip into that pool, because you're not making that kind of money anywhere else. And guys, we have a short career, short window to make money. If I was still fighting, I would 100% be trying to get fights over there.
Yeah, I mean, what are we doing? Like, it's like a no-brainer. I don't fault anyone that's trying to do that over there. Like, I told this story. I forgot what podcast I was on, but I was doing a Broadway boxing type of show in December, and Jerry Forrest was fighting on it. Remember Jerry Forrest?
Yeah. Yep.
Heavyweight. Fought Zhang, tough. Fought a bunch of heavyweights. And he had been out for a while. And I'm doing the fighter meeting. I'm like, yeah, what are your goals, man? Like, what do you want to do for the rest of your career?
Oh, fight that you called. I called it for Pro Box, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, what do you want to do, man? Like, what's your goals for the rest of your... And he pretty much cut me off. I was like, I want to fight in Saudi Arabia. And I was like, yes, bro. Like, if you're a Jerry Forrest type, if you're any fighter, your goal should be that. Mm-hmm. Go where the money is. Just like any other profession. If you're a nurse, if you're a doctor, if you're working, driving a truck, if you're a garbage man, and there's some entity that's paying top dollar, that should be your goal. That's why are we doing this? So, like, I'm not shocked.
It's like a Las Vegas. Like, Las Vegas had a big need for teachers and nurses, so they were giving out great deals for people to move to Las Vegas.
I think they do that.
Yeah, I think they still do that. It's the same. Yeah. It's the exact same thing. It's just a different market. So yeah, I agree 100%. Go get that money, guys. The Jerry Forrest of the world. Like, you're probably not going to end up getting over there. But shoot, Canelo, even Gervonta. Like, dude, why leave that money there?
Well, Gervonta is interesting because, you know, he's really drew a line in the sand. Like, he was tweeting pictures of all them up on the stage at the awards dinner and like clowning them and saying, I don't need you. I'll never do that. Which is admirable in a way, but, you know, he's kind of like, I don't get too deep into this, but like, he needs those opponents. If he wants to like reach top dollar, he's going to eventually need them. That's a story for another day. But yeah, theory three was that Canelo's demands were too much, and this is not that far-fetched. Like I said before, Canelo is the driver.
He's shooting for the stars, baby. That's how negotiating works. Like, how do you know too much is too much? We've talked about this. Like, that's why you say, like, I'm terrible at this. Like, you don't want to put yourself out of the stratosphere, but also you got to try.
Of course. And he's probably seeing a fight, you know, a fight being agreed to. And he was probably like, wait a second. Like, I didn't announce this. Mm. Now we have a location. Like, it's at Allegiant Stadium.
We have a location and deal's not done.
Right. Despite UNLV having a game there, that's not the easiest thing to move. Like those things, and there's a lot of money that could be thrown around, but interesting. And then theory number four is that PBC Al Haymon, who loved working with Canelo Alvarez, I just spoke about that $15 million gate for the Berlanga fight, offered Canelo more money to stay with PBC and stay on this side of things. And let's just keep what we're doing. Let's just keep what we've been doing. What'd you
say? Counteroffer. So a counteroffer
from Haymon and PBC.
Yeah, that's very possible.
Like, hey, like this Jake Paul fight, there's rumors that PBC is going to be involved. Like, let's just keep that going. Maybe you can fight someone, you know, pretty much continue to do what you've been doing with us here on American soil without Saudi involved, with Amazon involved, with your suppliers over in Mexico, which Canelo loves. And that's a big part of Canelo's career right now, is having these fights free in the U.S. Free in Mexico. So let's just keep everything the same, Canelo. Gets a call from Al directly. And I'll increase your pay, which is wild because he's getting like $50 million. And we'll just keep this going. That's it.
Pretty good theory. Theory four?
That's it. That's the fourth of my four theories.
Yeah. I like one and four. There was one. It was the first one, right?
Yeah, the first one was Turkey doesn't want anything to do with Jake Paul fight and is pulling the plug prematurely, or pulling the plug knowing that the fight is still on.
Right. So yeah, the walking away from the table, taking a lap. That's kind of where I'm thinking. And depending on whatever the reason that it's going that way, I just think that's where we're at. Before was good too, though. That's an interesting thought.
Could it
potentially all play out, though, Dan? This will all play out. We may never know exactly, but if anybody's gonna know, they're gonna be we're gonna know here, and we're gonna let you guys know. So definitely stay tuned for the saga. continues.
It's juicy, man. It's juicy. Like last night was interesting because out of nowhere the fight is off, and it's just funny because I don't believe it was ever like fully on.
Right.
And it was a lot of smoke, and I did fall for it a little bit because of, you know, Turkey's reputation of putting on these fights.
That's what we have to do. We've got to speculate. We got to theorize. If we just sit there, oh, it happened, and there's nothing to talk about, you know, then we're not doing our job. But we were, you know, I was flying to San Antonio last night, and Dan's texting me this news, and we're both like, oh man, wow, we got a lot to talk about tomorrow.
Yeah, I wasn't planning on any of this. It was because this wasn't a story until last night. And it's just funny because the article on the link to the story to Ring Magazine is so brief. And it's just like, it's just, we will let you know more when we know more. It's like, it's do the math here. Like, Turkey owns Ring Magazine. He's using Ring Magazine as like an arm, like a media arm. So it's very possible that he didn't like how something went. Goes to someone at the ring, tells one of his people, hey, go to the Ring Magazine, have them put this out. And now this is his way of getting negotiation on his side. Like, this happens all the time in boxing. Like, this is not anything new. It's just different players now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll see, man. We're going to see how this plays out. But like you said, very interesting. You said we weren't going to talk about this. So now
we're talking about it.
This is the whole show.
No, we're done. We're done talking about this. We're going to voicemails. We'll see how it all plays out. Canelo, Jake Paul, Canelo Crawford, Canelo Benavidez, which I don't think is going to be one of those. No, Canelo Mobili, Canelo Skull.
All of those have Canelo in it. You know,
Canelo Algieri.
He's the guy. Canelo's the guy. We've already shared the ring. I think we're good on that.
He is the mover, and he is.
Yeah, mover and shaker.
The shaker.
He's still the face. He's still the money of boxing. I don't care what anybody says.
Before we get to the voicemails, is there any other news? We got Ryan Garcia back training with Eddie Reynoso. He has ditched Derek James. Eddie Reynoso has quite the stable, man.
Wait, so does that mean Teofimo Lopez and Ryan Garcia are in the same gym?
Yep. Apparently, wow. Teofimo went on a live yesterday and was like, me and Ryan Garcia are going to have some legendary sparring sessions.
That's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Reynoso has a crazy team. He's got, obviously, Canelo. He's got Ryan Garcia. He's got Teofimo. He's got Valdez. He's got... Does he still have the big heavyweight? Sanchez?
Sanchez, I believe. I like the Teofimo. I like that. I like that connection a lot. I think stylistically, I think a lot of the things that Canelo has learned to do from his head movement counters and being explosive, Teofimo does naturally. And I think if you put a little bit of structure to him, that kid's unstoppable. I love that connection. I don't know how much I like the Ryan.
Together for briefly.
Yeah, it didn't work out very well. So I don't know. Ryan. Yeah, Ryan's trying to structure Ryan, I don't think is a good thing. I think you just got to let him be a wild man.
Well, they also have Jaime Munguia, which... Munguia is on this like ninth trainer.
There's gonna be a big rebuilding process there.
How many trainers is Munguia gonna have?
Yeah, I mean he's a.
Is anyone gonna teach him defense? That's like number one.
My favorite was him. I thought him and Roach was a good fit actually, because he didn't teach him defense. He just was like, all right, just like, we're gonna make your offense better.
Yeah. This weekend, pro box fights. We also have Derek Chisora. The last ride against our guy, Otto Wallin, the New Yorker by way of Sweden. I don't know, like, Chisora, he says he would fight 100 fights if they would let him. Like, I respect the hell out of Chisora, and I think he's given some great nights. But there's something about a fighter that's just, like, hanging on too long and fighting too long, especially heavyweight, that just makes me kind of queasy.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, he's a grown man. He can do what he wants. It's his life. It's his brain. You can't knock him for making money for his family. You know, again, I always talk about that window that we have. It's very, very small. It's shutting every day. The guy's trying to maximize. I get it. In terms of, you know, his health and going on, listen, you're all in control of our bodies, our abilities, whatever we want to do. It is what it is. You know, you want to take a risk. Okay. It's a risky game.
Calling it his last ride. Is it? You tell me he's not going to fight again?
No, because they throw some money at him. He'll be back. And
he's going to lose. I think Valine can box circles around him.
Yeah, he's such a big, aggressive, mean guy, Jizor. He's fun to fight.
I said about Otto. I was like, that's the opposite. He's a big guy, but he's like a teddy bear.
Yeah, he's not scary at all, but he's damn good. He can box. Really good. He makes everybody look bad.
Oscar Duarte, this kind of sucks. Regis Progre has a shoulder injury.
Honestly, I don't know how much I wanted to see that, because I don't know how much Progre has left. I think he would have got beat up by Duarte. Duarte's on a real roll.
Yeah, sucks for Regis. And
he's fighting Madueño, though. That's the step in, right? That's actually pretty decent. For last minute, that's a good step in.
That's the guy that Keyshawn told us was the toughest fight of his career. You know, it wasn't Lemos, obviously, who steamrolled. It was Madueño.
He put a ton of pressure on him. We've had him on our air on Pro Box a number of times. Tough guy, man. Very physical. Good chin. I'm going to see what Duarte's power can do with that guy.
That's February 15th.
Next week?
Yeah, that's a DAZN card. All right, let's get to the voicemails. We have some great ones. Thank you, everyone that left us voicemails. Here we go, number one.
Hey, Chris and Dan. This is Edward from Houston, Texas. I just want to give a big shout out to you guys and to PBB.com also for bringing along Jim Lampley. I really miss that guy. And just hearing his voice, it just takes me back to the 90s, 2000s, just hearing him and Daryl Letterman and Larry Merchant just, you know, making the calls at these fights. I sometimes wish that this younger generation, they're still on YouTube, they can watch some of the old fights, but just to hear that, you know, those guys on the team. So that's it, man. I just wanted to say it's just been a pleasure just hearing Jim again. Really quick, Eric Morales versus Anaya Inoue in the prime.
What the hell?
Later, guys.
I didn't hear that when I was vetting these. Like, that was just like out of nowhere.
I just threw that right at the end there. I agree with him completely. You know, hearing Jim is so nostalgic and awesome. Great to see him, you know, out there doing his thing, and we get to deal with him behind the scenes too. He's awesome. He's fantastic. He tells the greatest stories. Greatest storyteller in our sport, in history.
Dude, his stories, like at a bar, or his stories when we're just sitting around the table, are the same quality and like the same intensity as if there was a microphone. He just always thinks that there's a microphone on him.
Well, he's enthralling too. The way he speaks, like you're just like, you're so locked in. He locks in an entire room. The whole media center circles around
whether
him.
Whether you like it or not.
Yeah, when he starts talking. Morales.
Hold on, I want to say one more thing about Jim. And like how this generation might not
understand
who he is. So we're after the fight, we're at the lounge hanging out. Jim's daughter's there, and she's my age. And I'd never met her, but I knew that he had a daughter. And I'm like, oh my God, like we have probably been in rooms together as kids numerous times. Just our dad's taking us to fights. And we probably have met. And it's interesting to meet someone that has kind of like lived a similar life to me growing up, being around boxing, the weirdest, wildest sport, being around things you probably shouldn't have seen at these ages. And she was, you know, reminiscing. We're talking about, you know, Larry Merchant. We're talking about Foreman and all that. And she says, I have a 6-year-old son. And I'm trying to explain to my son what their grandfather like does and what he once was, because Jim is pretty much retired, semi-retired. He's working with us at PBV. Oh, maybe he isn't. Maybe he could be working with Turkey. And she's like, yeah, I've been showing him YouTube of grandpa. And I thought that was pretty freaking interesting to show your grandkid or show your son. Like, oh, this is your grandfather. He was once one of the best broadcasters in the world. You know, in the U.S.
I think it's going to be hard for a 6-year-old to grasp that, but it's definitely a good idea that she's starting to show him now. So, over time, it'll start to layer into what his grandfather was all about.
Yeah, and the kid was probably like, can you put Blippi back on? Can you put Bluey back on?
Get Bluey back on.
But
a lot of the young fighters in our generation right now have no goddamn clue about fighters in the past. It blows my mind when I talk to some of these young guys and I bring up fighters of the past and they're like, who? Oh, I got to look him up. I'm like, you got to look him up. What are you doing, man? This is your job. You should know these guys.
And not only that, I would say a lot of Benavidez has shown a ton of respect to Jim. And a lot of fighters recognize him. A lot of fighters grew up watching HBO boxing, or they go back and watch. Some of them do. They should. And he's one of the biggest voices. Yeah, I think the hypothetical was Barrera versus Inoue.
Inoue Prime.
And what weight?
22.
Man, Barrera 22?
It was Morales, he said.
I said Morales?
Yeah, it was Morales. Which I like better than Barrera.
Man, that's a shootout.
I was always a Barrera fan. I liked Barrera in the Morales fights, but I think Morales against other guys was probably better. And especially stylistically for Inoue, that's a hell of a fight. At 22, yeah, it's hard to go against Inoue because he's just so damn good and we've seen so few chinks in his armor. But in terms of Morales, who was super durable back then at those weights, it would remind me of like it would kind of remind me of like the first Donaire fight in terms of what we could see. But man, I don't know.
So
that makes me think because if Donaire was that competitive in the first fight, I feel like Morales would win because Morales is just as dangerous as Donaire is. Morales was so clever, so clever.
I love Monito. He was, I don't know, that first fight, Donaire and Inoue. I know Inoue has the broken orbital.
Yeah, but orbital. Donaire broke his orbital. Like, Donaire did
but
that.
You know that down the stretch of that fight, even with the broken eye socket, Inoue outlanded Donaire 3-1.
Yeah.
Like,
But Donaire, because of his power, will often let guys throw at him. And not in saying that he was letting Inoue throw at him, but he got hit. Donaire gets hit a lot more than Morales did in his day.
Yeah.
You know, true. Morales was very, very savvy because Donaire lives by his power and he knows he's got an eraser in that thing. Morales didn't. Morales was like super classy. He had excellent, some of the best technique of our generation. That's a hell of a question. Our callers all rock, man. That was good.
Right. I just threw that in there. I don't know.
What's up, Inside Boxing Live? 2025 is looking like a big year of boxing fights. The top five fights I'm looking forward to are Haney versus Garcia 2. Mm-hmm. Tank versus Shakur, Crawford versus Canelo, and Benavidez versus Bivol and Arthur Benavidez, and then Richardson Hitchens and Teofimo Lopez. Where do you guys rank these five fights in terms of excitement or how excited you are for the fight? Thanks.
He says he's excited, but that guy doesn't sound excited.
No, he's a pretty mellow voice.
A lot of those fights aren't happening, man, or they're not announced.
Not announced. I believe it's kind of like dream fights, dream perspectives. I love, Benavidez with either Bivol or Benavidez. I'm sorry, Benavidez. All these Bs.
The Bs are tough.
You know what I mean? I love Benavidez versus Bivol or Beterbiev. In any shape, any way, shape, or form, those guys fighting each other is awesome. Surprised they was so interested in the Teofimo Lopez Hitchens fight. I like the fights too. Two guys that I know really well. I don't know how well their styles match up, though.
Ryan and Haney, I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah, that's an exciting... The build-up that's going to be crazy. And Canelo Crawford, that's another one. The build-up will be crazy. I don't know how great the fight will be, but there'll be so much hype around that. It'll be fun.
I think there are some fans that are pretty upset about Crawford-Canelo not happening. I know there's a lot out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
there's a lot out there that are like, good. This fight was never supposed to happen anyway. Welterweight. There's so many better opponents that Canelo could fight. But also, there's a large amount of like casuals. There's a large amount of non-boxing fans that were going to watch this fight. It's needed in boxing to have a fight of that magnitude.
Everybody was going
to
watch that fight. I don't care whether you love it or hate it. You're watching that fight.
Ronnie, our old producer, John Boy Media, texted me immediately. He got the alert on his phone. Like ESPN put an alert that Crawford Canelo is have an agreement. This was like 24 hours ago, 48 hours ago.
Ronnie's like the perfect stand in for like what the public is about. You know, I don't want to call him a casual because we often use it as a derogatory term.
But
like, he's a casual. Like he's a, like if it's Ryan Garcia, we're going to know about it. He's going to know about it. If it's Jake Paul, he's going to know about it. You know, if it's Crawford Canelo, these crossover fights, he's going to be the guy who's going to be like, whoa, dude, is this happening? You know, like
exactly. Yeah. So there, I would say there's more people upset that this fight potentially is off, even though I don't think it's off. Next
Which
up.
Which is good because I have no access.
Hey, what's up, Dan? What's up, Chris? This is Rob from SoCal, R-A-V. And sorry. And I may or may not have been the guy that put that prediction in for the Karan Salinger Usyk Fury 2. So close, you know. I really thought we were going to get that. But I think Dmitry Bivol is going to stop Beterbiev in their rematch on February 22nd. So if you saw the face, and if not a late stoppage, it's going to be a clear decision, a super clear decision where no one can say Beterbiev.
Backtracking already.
I saw the face-off, and Bivol is pissed, bro. All he's thinking about is revenge. In that face-off, Ade Oladipo was making all these jokes, and Beterbiev was going for all of them. Bivol was not. Bivol was sitting there mad as fuck. Like, I don't know. He looked like a statue. He looked like Alex Pereira, man. He really did. But even in Dan's interview with David Benavidez said, Bivol is one of the hardest hitters he's ever sparred. And he sparred everyone, you know? Like, you wouldn't really think Bivol is a hard hitter like that, but shit, if Benavidez is saying it, I'm going to listen. And also, shit, we're not going to forget, Bivol is younger, but Beterbiev is what? Is he 40 now? He might be 40, 41 or something, and he had that injury. He's only going to have more wear and tear going into this, so.
Yeah, I'm cutting him off. Interesting. It's a hot take that he, like, went back on real quick.
Yeah, but he made some really good points into why he's got the idea that he's got. I did notice that about Bivol. He is stone cold about the lead up to this fight. Everything. He didn't want to shake hands. He's not breaking his face at all. And we've seen Bivol in the past, maybe not in lead ups of fights, but he's got a little smirk to him here and there. He can be kind of like in a good mood. This one, not at all. So interesting.
Dude, if Bivol stops Beterbiev,
crazy.
Insane scenes. Like, this guy would, it would be, you put him pound for pound for like top three or four, which I think he's around the outside of that. It would be a wild outcome. I don't see that.
I don't see it either. I think we're going to have another really tactical fight similar to the last one. But it would be cool to have a definitive answer. And then, like, it would be great. Like he said, if it was definitive, like we wouldn't even need a rubber match. Like, it's just like, it was that good, and they can move on to those other fights that are available. But I don't know. I don't really see that.
Yeah, me neither. I'd love that this fight is right around the corner, and people are ready for it. Here we go. Here's Perry, who left a bunch of voicemails. Same question. Really adamant.
Hey, Chris and Perry here. I know I left this voicemail before, but I really want to get Chris's take here, so I'll be quick as possible. Tyrone Davis, who fought Benavidez in 21, sparred Crawford for Porter and sparred Canelo for Charlo, listed out the 4 points when assessing the matchup. He said, number one, that it was a sizable gap in Canelo's power, strength, and physical size, that their height and reach doesn't necessarily equate to size. Point number two, he actually feels Canelo's counterpunching versus Crawford's will actually be the difference in this fight. He says Canelo will holster Crawford's offense with his aggressive counterpunching. And three, Canelo, once he realizes he can't hurt you, he'll start punching with you, and that'll further make it hard for Crawford. And fourth and final, Crawford has a wrestling background, but he noted that when he sparred with Triple G, Triple G had wrestled in Kazakhstan for 7 years, and he wasn't able to wrestle and hold Canelo and nullify his inside game. So it's going to be even difficult for Crawford to do that. Your quick thoughts. Thanks.
Perry.
Good question. Great points. I've sparred Canelo. I know the guy is very, very sturdy, physically strong. I didn't think he was the biggest puncher I'd ever been in the ring with, you know, but it was sparring, but physically very, very strong. I agree with all those points that Davis was making and that Perry just brought up in terms of the counterpunching. Canelo is a very, very good counterpuncher. And he does stifle your offense in that way because it makes you want to keep your hands close to home. And we saw Crawford in Madrimal fight. He was getting hit with shots, getting punched through the gloves at times with a guy who is two weight classes below where Canelo is at. It's a really tall order for Crawford. I don't know how competitive the fight really is, you know, once we see these guys actually in the ring together. I don't know. A lot of people don't give Canelo credit. You know, my buddy Paul Malignaggi loves to shit on him, but Canelo's really good. This is a tough fight for Crawford.
Once again, like, this is what makes Crawford Canelo intriguing. Is like the what ifs.
It's a what if. It's like, right. If you look at it on paper, you're like, no, it's not a competitive fight.
But like for the thinking mind, like Perry, for like the fan out there that has seen this time and time again, bigger guy versus smaller fighter. Can a smaller fighter beat the bigger man? Usually they can't. And we're dealing with someone as skilled as Crawford is, but you're dealing with someone, an all-time great Canelo with a granite chin. This is what makes this fight intriguing, is you can build cases all day long. This is why people were excited about this fight. I'm using past tense because as of now, the fight is off. But I'm showing you that people are excited. People are still into it. It's not going anywhere. But you can build these cases all day long for why you think Crawford might be able to win, or build, poo-poo them.
The intrigue comes because Crawford's like an alien. Like, he doesn't make sense, this guy. Like, he goes up in weight class and becomes more dangerous than a bigger puncher. Like, and he's fought so many weight classes, and he's so dangerous. And guys that you thought were going to be tough fights, he ices. So it's like, that's where the what ifs, like you said, the what if is why this fight is even intriguing.
The what if is what makes boxing, like, one of the best sports. Like, when Pacquiao jumped up all that weight to fight De La Hoya.
Yep.
It was a huge debate. It was letting, you know, there was before Twitter, but like there were debates happening everywhere. Can this tiny guy beat, you know, a guy for the middleweight?
So, he beat the shit out of him and retired him.
Yeah, I don't know if that was going to happen with Crawford, but maybe we'll know. Maybe we won't.
Hey, guys, big fan. I wanted to ask you about DAZN. You see, with Top Rank leaving ESPN and going to DAZN probably, and the Saudis getting a stake in it, I think like 10%. It seems like DAZN is really going to be almost not just like the main place for boxing, but almost the only place. I think only PBC has a deal with Prime. So I wanted to see if you guys agree with me, because I don't think that's good for boxing, because I think the best way to grow the sport is to put it somewhere on an app or a streaming service, somewhere where people already have that and they can stumble upon it. The only people who have DAZN are already boxing fans. People don't like downloading your app, things like that. Like, I think it would have been better for the Saudis and Top Rank and everyone to look for deals with, like, Netflix. The WWE is coming to Netflix. They just did an NFL game. Like, and you could put on Netflix and you saw, like, Top Rank was doing a show. One of those free shows on Netflix, people could stumble on it.
And he went on for a while there. But, would I love boxing to be on Netflix, Chris? Of course. Does Netflix want boxing? No. So that's pipe dream.
He's right. Ultimately, he's right. It would be better for boxing to be on more channels so we can have a bit of a competition, really. And that's how we grew up, right? Like, we watched HBO. There was Showtime. There was ESPN. There was, all these different outlets actually watched these fights. And at this point, new fans could stumble on, because you could turn on Wednesday night fights on ESPN one night, or Tuesday night fights, back in the day.
USA.
Friday night fights. USA, yeah. Right? So that's how we became fans, right? Well, you were already in the sport, but that's how I became fans, just tuning into everything that was on all the time, not just going to one place. I was lucky. I had a premium subscription to HBO, so I got to watch all those fights when I was a kid, but I didn't get Showtime until later on.
You got that for Taxi Cab Confessions, right?
Yes, when I was 7 years old.
Real Sex. Remember Taxi Cab Confessions?
Real Sex was wild.
Some weird shit on a sleepover watching that.
Very weird shit. But yeah, no, I have to agree. But like you said, Dan, it's like, if they don't want boxing, it's going to end up in where it's at DAZN.
Netflix is interested in Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. Netflix is interested in Jake Paul versus Canelo. They're not really interested in a developmental boxing series. They're not interested in a Showtime championship boxing level type of fight. That's just not their model right now. They're Monday Night Raw. They're NFL Christmas Day. Come on. That's a way different ball game. I do agree with the caller about it being on, more out there. Like, you're not stumbling upon boxing on DAZN. Like, you're a boxing fan. You have the subscription. You're going to it. And then you know what you're watching that night. So you're not going to stumble upon it like you maybe would stumble upon it with even ESPN linear, which it from, you know, I don't know what's going on with Top Rank. Their deal is up in the beginning, at the end, the middle of the summer. And I've heard a lot of different things. They could be going to the zone. They could be re-upping with ESPN. They could be finding a new platform. I agree. And the competition part too. Like, you want to shop around these fights. You want to, you know, you don't want one entity. You don't want one person making all the decisions in boxing, and you don't want it airing on one, just one network.
Boxing has always been capitalistic. You've got this competition, you know, like you have to perform, you know, it's merit based, and it's scary when there's going to be one unifier, like the way the UFC is. You know, you don't have those options and those competitive networks to go with. But again, we have a vacuum created, and ProBox TV, for example, has become the developmental ground for these fighters. So it's leaving a big opening for ProBox TV or so maybe some other smaller entities to step up.
Oh, there's definitely a void in the U.S. And also, like, I've heard this theory, like, oh, if everyone is under the zone, then the fights will get made easier.
Not necessarily.
You would think. It's been the case for a while. Like, before Turkey came along, Matchroom and Golden Boy were on the zone, and they did not work together. Mm-hmm. Eddie Hearn and Oscar hated each other, and they still do. But now there's a unifier by the name of Turkey El Sheikh.
By the name of Money Green.
Right. Warren and Hearn, not the best example because they were on different networks, are now best friends. They're chummy. Chumming it up because of the money. Last voicemail.
Hey, Chris and Dan. It's Arat here. I'm a big fan of the channel. I do have like a couple of questions, maybe some hypothetical or like maybe a different type of question that you guys may have not been asked before. What is more dangerous, a 6-foot Canelo or a Ryan Garcia with good defense? And then I guess to lean into my next question, if you were to add another attribute to a world-class fighter today, what would you add? All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
I don't understand his last part, but the 6-foot Canelo or a Ryan Garcia with defense, what would you rather have? That's a hilarious what if. Or would you rather?
I'm gonna poke holes in both because Canelo maximizes his height and he's really good at fighting taller guys. So it would completely change his style. I don't think it really matters. And if he was 6 foot, he'd just be heavier. So if a 6 foot Canelo would be a heavyweight, you know, and you know, he'd just be a bigger, taller version of himself. Because what is he, 5'8", 5'7"? Now you're adding a bunch of inches. Yeah, he'd be a heavyweight.
5'9".
And Ryan,
I'm 5'9", guys.
Part of Ryan's ability to knock guys out as much because he is vulnerable. You know, it's like the Arturo Gatti factor. It's like Gatti used to ice guys. Yeah, he had great power, absolutely. But guys could hit him so they would take chances and leave openings. Ryan's that way too. If Ryan was defensively sound, I don't know if he'd get so many knockouts.
Very good point. The beauty of or the allure of watching a Ryan Garcia fight is like he's walking that like tight. It could just blow up at any minute.
I've never made the comparison to him and Gotti, but there's some parallels there because Gotti was that way too. Like watched Gotti because he was vulnerable because, you know, like he would get hit. Guys would go for it. He made for great fights. Ryan's that way too.
Yeah, Ryan being like more defensively sound, defensively responsible will probably take away from his
power for sure. Take away from his knockout. Yeah.
Take away from those quick hooks. He doesn't throw a lot of punches. It's like he should have better defense. And if he's watching or listening, who knows? He will DM me and say, I have good defense. Those numbers are wrong. He would tell me, I have a jab. He would tell me for years that he had a jab, even though like the stats would say, you land 2 jabs around. He would DM me and say, those numbers are wrong. I have a jab. Like there's a lot of different types of jabs. Not the first fighter to say that to me, but he doesn't throw a lot of punches, Ryan Garcia. Like he should
especially now, he should be
defensively sound, right, Chris? If you don't throw a lot of punches,
I mean, with the height that he has, absolutely, it would be. But he's not like a wizard with his feet. He's not a great mover. We saw him turning his back so much in the Duarte fight and the Haney fight. You know, trying to fight at that kind of shell.
What was
but
that?
Again, I think he's just so intuitive and he's so talented with he's so fast twitch. You know that a lot of that just comes from his natural ability.
Yeah. I just got a email confirmation from Top Rank. You are confirmed for all Baranchik Keyshawn Davis Fight Week events, including Fight Night.
Nice. I'm actually going to be hosting the weigh-in with Christina Ponce.
Really? On the stage? I'm going to heckle your ass.
Yep, do it.
I'll bring in some tomatoes. I'm going to throw them up there.
Tomatoes.
Make sure I hit you, not Christina, because I love Christina Poncher.
Yeah, Christina's awesome.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do some interview, like some mini mic stuff with a lot of these guys. You know, Abdullah Mason. I want to talk to him.
He's a great interview, by the way.
Abdullah's great. What this guy's about.
Get Jared Anderson, too. He's super fun to talk to.
I did talk to him before the Bacoli fight.
And super nice guy, too.
Asked him, if you weren't boxing, what would you be doing? And he said, man, you know I'd be selling drugs. Is that the answer you want?
Kind of sold with that question and answer.
And everyone was like, what the fuck? Why did he say that? Why did he say that? I'm like, because that's his answer.
Yeah, I mean, you can't tell the truth.
Boxing gets these guys out of trouble. Sometimes they stay in trouble.
Rohan Polanco is on that card, too. That's not a great interview, but a really fun fighter. I like him. I like him a lot. He's a vicious guy. I like that.
Valentine's Day. Friday night at the theater.
It's a good car. Top Rank, they stack their car with their talent. It's good.
I'm excited.
Good show, yeah.
I'll be there. I'm going to hopefully get some content for you guys. Hang out. We will maybe do an impromptu meetup before the fight. I know you won't be able to make that. You're calling the fight, right?
Yes.
Yep. If you weren't calling the fight and we were just going, we would have set up a party, but you're working.
I'm working.
When are you getting in town?
Wednesday night.
Nice.
Maybe we'll get
Jerry in the big city.
Do some steak on Thursday after the win.
Keens?
A little Keens action?
Nice. And enjoy San Antonio.
We gotta let the listeners, we gotta produce more content.
From Keens?
Stuff that we do. No, just in general. The stuff that we do, you know, on location, in between, the behind-the-scenes stuff. I know you've been getting some requests for that, so.
I'm down. I mean, we have a great producer in Mitch Matachia, who has a background in documentaries, a background in features. And that's something I want to start doing more.
He likes steakhouses, too, does Mitch.
He loves steak. We set up, if Keens would let us, we did like a steakhouse roundtable.
That'd be dope.
That'd be sick. I'm thinking of a different type of content. We could be seeing some different type of content in the next couple of weeks. All right, everyone. Chris is in San Antonio for Pro Box. Go watch that on Saturday night. There's a few fights on Saturday. Otto Wallin, if that tickles your fancy.
Is that the weight phrase? Action.
And all that. Chris, enjoy San Antonio. Enjoy the churros. Enjoy the Tex-Mex.
I'm going to get some barbecue, and I might do a steakhouse tonight. I don't know. A couple barbecue spots I want to check out. There's some museums. Got to check out the Riverwalk, the Alamo.
Wow.
Gotta do it. I'm doing it all. I love beautiful. San Antonio. It's a great town.
Here in New York, it's freezing rain. So
yeah, I heard.
Horrible. Horrible.
I'm repping, though.
Let's go, Knicks.
I got my
big
Knicks.
Game.
Old
Saturday night against
on.
The Celtics. All right, everybody. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you have some information on Canelo Crawford. Goodbye.
Or San Antonio.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.